today on The Journey.
What can we do to move from being spiritually stuck to doing what God has us to do? What I want to do today is drill down on five principles of fresh faith.
What is faith? Can you define it with biblical clarity? Today, Ron Moore offers a description of faith from the book of Hebrews that will help to keep your faith focused and new. Before that, I want to let you know about Ron's book, Worn Out by Obedience. Its insightful reflections offer warning, grace, and strength for the spiritually weary, and it's available for a gift of any amount at ronmoore.org. Your gift will help further our ministry of developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now, here's Ron with a message titled, Fresh Faith on the Journey.
So growing up in Oklahoma, I had a lot of opportunity to travel on dirt roads. We had a lot of dirt roads in our little rural town. You know, dirt roads are great until it rains or the snow melts. And then they become very slick and you can get stuck. You know what it's like to be stuck. You've either been stuck in the mud or stuck in snow. Either way, when you're stuck, it's a frustrating thing. When you're stuck, whatever plan you had, that stopped. Wherever you were headed, it doesn't matter anymore. When you're stuck, you're stuck. Being stuck is not always caused by snow or mud, is it? Sometimes it's caused by life's challenging circumstances, and we get spiritually stuck. Sometimes, even as believers, we veer off the road, and we get stuck in sin. Sometimes we just flat get lethargic. I mean, just really not that interested in moving forward in our Christian life at that point, and we get stuck. Sometimes we get stuck in fear, paralyzing our forward motion. Sometimes we get stuck in confusion. Some stuff just doesn't seem to make sense, and we get stuck in the senselessness of it all. Whatever causes us to be stuck, we would all agree with this. It's a dangerous spot, isn't it? And it's a vulnerable spot. So today, we want to look at what can we do to move from being spiritually stuck to back on a road and doing what God has us to do. Take your Bibles and turn to the New Testament book of Hebrews. Today, we come to Hebrews chapter 11, where we will learn how we can be injected with a dose of fresh faith. What I want to do today is to drill down on five principles of fresh faith. Let me set the context before we start. In chapter 10 of Hebrews, the writer is writing to a group of people, he says, who have gone through persecution. They have gone through suffering. They have been imprisoned. They have been dragged before public arena and ridiculed. Some of their stuff has been plundered. And now, they're getting ready to go through that again. Persecution's coming. And so the writer, knowing that, says, we are not those who shrink back. We are those who live by faith. We are those who stand strong in the midst of challenging times. In fact, he says, I want to tell you about some people in the Old Testament who stood strong, who lived by faith. And chapter 11 is chock full of people who live by faith. In fact, 16 people are mentioned by name. A group is mentioned, the prophets, and then three events, the creation, crossing the Red Sea, and then the walls of Jericho that came tumbling down. And through this, the writer is saying, man, here are some stories of real faith. This is what it takes to live a life that truly pleases God. So what I want to do is start with a description of faith from Hebrews 11:1, give a definition of faith, and then look at these five fresh faith principles. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. Let's break that down. First of all, when we look at the word faith, it is a word used in its noun form, in its verb form, in its adjective form 260 times in the New Testament. So when you're reading the New Testament, we need to know what faith is because we're going to see it. And it simply means to trust or believe. Now, the writer doesn't leave us with that. He continues to describe what that is. But before we get the rest of the verse, I want us to make sure that we understand when we think of faith, we need to think of faith in two ways. First of all, we need to think of saving faith. We'll see that in this passage. The righteous will live by faith or through faith. That's that time I realize I can't save myself. There's nothing I can do to have a relationship with the living God. I'm not good enough. I'm a sinner to the core. I can't work it enough. I can't go to church enough. I can't give enough. I can't do a CCD class. I can't do a confirmation class. My baptism doesn't do it. I cannot work my way to God. And so I trust in Jesus Christ alone as the only way to have a relationship with the living God. That's saving faith. That is one time for all time. After we become a Christian, God puts us on his journey, right? Until we go to heaven. And there are ups and downs and there are challenges along the way. And every day he says, you've got to trust me. It was great you trusted me on Monday, but it's Tuesday now and you can't live on Monday's faith. That's called daily faith, or we could call it practical faith. And that's the faith that we're going to see in Hebrews. These people had the saving faith. It was a one time for all time. But now they go through things in their life, and we're going to see this aspect of saving faith. Okay, back to our description in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. So faith is the assurance. That's a great word. Depending on what version you have, sometimes it's translated confidence. Sometimes it's translated substance. It is the assurance. It's the confidence of things hoped for. And that's a great word. Hope for is not some desire I have or some wish I have. The word here for hope is a certain expectation for the future anchored in the past. How do I know that God is going to provide for me tomorrow? Because he provided for me yesterday. How do I know God's going to get me through this situation? Because he's gotten me through situations before. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. That word conviction means to prove by test, to demonstrate, to do it. Assurance is, here's what I know. I know it's certain. Conviction is, I'm going to get it done. I'm going to do it. Faith is not just saying, I believe. Faith is acting out on what I believe. And I love the word things here. Can't see it in the English, but in Greek, that word means a thing done, an accomplished fact. So faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. So we could just take that description and put this definition with it. It would be this: an active trust displayed by obedience. You can't say, I believe God, I love him, I love to come and sing the songs, and then live a disobedient life. That's not faith. It just doesn't work like that. Are we going to fall along the way? Absolutely. But if disobedience becomes a habit of our life, we are not living a life of faith. Okay, five fresh faith principles for getting unstuck. Here's the first one. Fresh faith is fed by giving God my best. Look at chapter 11, verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through faith, though he died, he still speaks. Now, when you see an event in the New Testament or a name in the New Testament, the writer is saying, I'm just putting this name here, but you should know everything that goes on in that person's life or that event. If I know you're a fan of a certain team and I said, that was a great game yesterday, that's all I'd have to say, and you would know all about the game. You would know the score. You would know how people scored. You would know all about the game. But all I would have to say is that was a great game. That's what the writer is saying. Hey, what about Abel? And the readers should say, oh yeah, I know all about Abel. Well, if we don't know about Abel, then we got to go back to the source, and the source would be Genesis chapter 4, verses 4 and 5. You know, Adam and Eve had two sons. First one was Cain, and then they had Abel. Cain was a farmer. Abel was a shepherd. Abel brought of the firstborn of his flock and their fat portions, and the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. Normally, what do? We go right to the Cain story. You remember that? God says, hey, Cain's sin is crouching at your door, ready to take you over. You can overcome it. Cain kills Abel. So that's usually what we focus on. But the writer here says, Time out. Let's go back and look at Abel. Cain brought this offering from the fruit of the ground. He was a farmer. You'd expect that. Abel brought this offering from the flock. He was a shepherd. You'd expect that. But it wasn't about the offering. It was about his attitude. By the way, it's never about the offering, is it? It's always about the attitude. So the only time Jesus mentions how much money a person gave was that woman giving less than a penny. It was her attitude. Here, Abel brought the firstborn of his flock and their fat portions. That means Abel brought the fattest of the firstborn. In other words, he brought the best of the best. You know why he did that? Because he knew that's what God deserved. God deserves our best. Abel, way back in Genesis 4, understood four principles of giving. One, God owns all things. Do you believe that? And be careful saying that. All things are a gift from him. If he owns all things, right, I have nothing unless he gives it to me. All things are to be used for him, not for me, but for him. Thankfully, he provides all I need, but worship is giving back to him, and giving is an act of worship. Abel understood that. He gave God his very best. What we give is an expression of our heart, and what we give exposes our heart. That's the story of Abel. His heart is exposed. He brought his very best to God. He didn't wait and see what he had left over. He said, "That is my most valuable offering, and I'm bringing it to God." Giving is an expression of our heart. Some people are stuck in their spiritual walk, and it all comes back to their giving. It's that simple. Second fresh faith principle. Fresh faith walks with God. I love this story. This is a story of Enoch, chapter 11, verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now, before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. So Enoch's story is found in Genesis chapter 5. We hear a little bit about him in Jude. We know that he stood strong in his generation. But in Genesis chapter 5, there's this bridge portion of genealogy, and it's from Adam to Noah. But right in the middle, after everyone, he died and he died and he died and he died, here is Enoch. In Genesis 5, 21 to 24, when Enoch lived 65 years, he fathered Methuselah. Enoch walked with God after he fathered Methuselah 300 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Now, there are a lot of godly men who died, but right here in this genealogy of, and he died, and he died, and he died, and he died, there's freshness of saying, God just took Enoch. He walked with God. I love how Hebrews says it. He was not found. It's like an unsolved mystery. Where's Enoch? I don't know. He was there yesterday. We didn't have a funeral for him. He just is gone. Walked with God. What does that mean? There's a guy named Marcus Dodds. He's an old commentator, and he has some great stuff on this. And Dodds said, this is what it means to walk with God. I am God's friend and enjoy his company. I'm going in the same direction as God shown to me in his word. My love for God and my desire to please him saturates my thoughts. I view my circumstances in light of my relationship with God. I seek God's examination of my heart through the reading of his word. By the way, you can't walk with God and not read his word. Sin causes unrest and moves me to repentance. A lack of fellowship with God results in spiritual loneliness. My relationship with God is not compartmentalized. It impacts every area of my life. I desire to repress thoughts God disapproves. One more. I desire to nurture my friendship with God. Do you desire that? Do you desire to nurture your friendship with God? Walking with God is a lifestyle of faith, and it takes time, and it takes energy, and it takes nurturing, and you have to be in his word, and you have to spend time in prayer, and you have to use your gift. You have to do those five essentials of word, worship, connect, serve, and share we talk about. I had a professor in the seminary, Howard Hendricks. He's a great guy. And he always said, when I get the urge to exercise, I just lie down on the couch and the urge goes away. There are a lot of Christians that do the same thing, right? When I get the urge to get serious about my relationship with God, I just do the spiritual equivalent of lying down on the couch and the urge goes away. Fresh faith principle number three. Fresh faith stands strong in a culture that opposes God. We see this in all the people in Hebrews 11. Noah is one. In verse 7, by faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear, constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this, he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness that comes by faith. Long before Noah built the ark, he was, 2 Peter says, a preacher of righteousness. He was standing up in a corrupt and violent society. That's how Genesis 6 through 9 describes the society that Noah was living in. Corrupt and violent. Sin was not an isolated incident. It wasn't an event here or there. The whole society, there was violence, immorality, exploitation, perversion, depravity. People who say, I can't believe how bad it is. This is as bad as it's ever been. They don't read history and they don't read the Bible. People were bad to the cultural core. And in that society, Noah was a righteous man. He followed God, not only saving faith, but daily faith. He was blameless in his generation. That doesn't mean he was perfect, but he was a man of integrity. Again, in a violent and corrupt generation. And like his great-grandfather Enoch, Noah walked with God. Are you standing strong as a believer in your culture? When you get convicted about something, do you actually do something about it? You got to live by your convictions because the world is watching us. And when we talk about following Christ, but look like we're following ourselves, or we're so tied up in the culture, you couldn't tell the difference. People say, what's the use? Why do I want to get involved in that? Didn't change them any. If we're going to be people of conviction, we have to stand up strong in our generation. There's got to be something refreshingly different about us. Number four, fresh faith forges through failure. I won't take time to read it, but there in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 12 is a story about Abraham and Sarah. You know, the story, God said to Abraham and Sarah, you're going to have a son, and by that son, you're going to have generations of people, as many as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. But the problem was they're in their old age and they don't have kids yet. It's a great story of Abraham. God gives him this great promise, but he failed many times. God calls him from Ur. He goes up to Haran. He stays there till his father dies. He goes down to Canaan. There's a famine in Canaan, so he goes to Egypt. Remember what he did when he went to Egypt? He said, Sarah, man, she's a knockout. She's beautiful. And when I get there, those Egyptian rulers are going to take her and kill me. So he lied and said, she's my sister. All kinds of consequences to that. Then later on, you remember, Sarah said, I'm not going to have a baby. I don't know what God's talking about. I'm going to shortcut it. Here's Hagar, my handmaiden. Abraham willingly took her. They have Ishmael. Still consequences of that today. Shortcut God's plan. And yet, they're still in the hall of faith. Faith forges through failure. Anyone here failed? But you don't understand, Ron. I failed so bad, there are terrible consequences. God's grace overrules our past. Consequences are still there. Yeah, we got to live with them. Abraham had to live with his, but he didn't quit. He kept moving forward. Fresh faith forges through failure. By the way, the whole chapter is filled with people who had mistakes. Noah, after building the ark, 450 days, the flood goes up, 150 days, the waters go down, 70 days, it dries. After however many years it took him to build the ark, some people say 120 years to build the ark. You know what he did? Planted some grapes, made wine, and got drunk. And it wreaked havoc on his family. Noah. Moses, he didn't get to lead the children of Israel to the promised land. Elijah, he demonstrates his great faith calling down fire on 300 prophets of Baal and then destroys them. Great act of faith. Then Jezebel says, I'm going to kill you, Elijah. And he ran for his life, afraid, hid under a broom tree and said, God, come on, I'm done with this. Just kill me and get it over with. We could go on and on. David, he had his problems, didn't he? And yet here they are in the hall of faith, because fresh faith forges through failure. God uses broken people and he empowers them to do great things. Last one. Fresh faith needs tangible reminders. You remember after the flood, what God put in the sky? Rainbow. Took Noah out and said, hey, see that rainbow? That is my promise to you. I will never destroy the whole earth again by flood. Beautiful, isn't it? Every time we see a rainbow, we get our phone and take a picture, right? Beautiful reminder of God's goodness, of his promise, of his faithfulness that took place way back there in Genesis. So here's what I ask you to do. Get some tangible things of faith in your life. Things that God has done for you. Things that he has allowed you to get through. And put that object in your home or on your desk. It was like the children of Israel. Remember after they crossed the Jordan, God said, I want you to get leaders from the 12 tribes and they're going to get a stone. And there must have been big stones. He said, I want you to carry them on his shoulders. And you're going to put them in a pile. And then when the kids ask, what in the world is that pile of rocks doing there? You say, I'm glad you asked. I got a great story for you. So what's a tangible thing that God has done in your life that you can say, oh, I'm glad you asked. I got a great story for you. We can look back at that and say, you know what? I can trust God for tomorrow because what he did yesterday. So fresh faith means that we don't want to stay stuck anymore, right? So what are we going to do to get unstuck? You know, when you're stuck, what you always want to do, you always want to put the accelerator down to the floor, right? But that just makes you more stuck. So you can't keep doing the things that you were doing that got you stuck. So what are you going to do? Only you can answer that question. I have not been in the Word lately, but you know, I've never really been in the Word. And well, what are you going to do about it? Yeah, this sin that just drags me down all the time, pornography or gossip or whatever. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?
And Ron will be right back with a preview of our next broadcast. Please stay with us. Do you desire to turn the corner in your walk with Jesus? If so, maybe you don't know where to start. You feel held back by the past, or maybe you're calloused by sin. Well, King David, the man after God's own heart, experienced this very thing. In Ron Moore's book, Worn Out by Obedience, David is presented as a spiritual mentor. He's both flawed and on fire. He's the person you are and the person you want to be. In Worn Out by Obedience, you'll discover how God often molds your heart, like King David's, in seasons of brokenness, loneliness, and disappointment, sometimes even in your waywardness. Worn Out by Obedience is published by Moody Press and can be yours for a gift of any amount when you visit ronmoore.org. Again, that web address is ronmoore.org. Or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Your gift today will help keep the journey on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now, let's rejoin Ron for a look at our next broadcast.
You got to fix your eyes on Jesus. It's kind of hard to do. There's that powerful pull to distract our eyes off of Jesus. So, how do we keep our eyes on Jesus? And maybe there's a better question. What in the world does that even mean?
We hope you can join us for that message next time. And don't forget to order your copy of Ron's encouraging book, Worn Out by Obedience. If you're spiritually weary, discouraged, or exhausted, Worn Out by Obedience will help you to keep going or start moving. Worn Out by Obedience is published by Moody Press and is yours for a gift of any amount at ronmoore.org. Again, our address is ronmoore.org. Or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. And we want our Pittsburgh area listeners to know about some exciting upcoming events. How would you like to experience the Bible coming to life as you walk in the footsteps of Jesus and reflect on his ministry in Galilee and Jerusalem? You can do that when you join Ron Moore in the journey for a 10-day biblical encounter tour in Israel from April 20th to 29th, 2020. To learn more, visit ronmoore.org. Also, be sure to make note of an upcoming concert. Dove Award winners 10th Avenue North bring their No Shame Tour to the Bible Chapel in McMurray on November 8th. For more information and tickets, visit biblechapel.org/concerts. And please remember that the journey relies on your generous donations to keep this ministry on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Your gift today will be deeply appreciated. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron Moore next time as we walk together on the journey.